A Sickness in Time by M.F. Thomas and Nicholas Burkettle. Narrated by Roseanne Sinclair. Chapter 11. Maria was hiking through the woods once again. Only this time, there was no marked trail. She was an intruder, a criminal anarchist carrying a bomb. The jostling of her backpack put her on edge, as if any random bump might be the last sound she would ever hear. Somewhere ahead was a hole in the ground where a section of pipe was being run under these woods in a small New Jersey neighborhood outside Princeton. Maria was less than a quarter mile from the road and could hear the occasional car, despite the late hour. She had stashed her motorcycle at a church near the airport. No one lived close enough to the proposed blast site to be hurt, but hopefully the ones just beyond, who owned good property, would be angry enough at the threat to their homes that construction would be snarled up for a long time in community protests, and the investors who sought to do their work quietly and unobtrusively would find a harsh spotlight shining on them. In 7 more days, give or take, this section would be complete. The hole would be filled, and the safest, cleanest chance to stop it all would be gone. She found the fence, and behind it, big diggers, the temporary supervisor buildings, and a lot of stacked concrete pipe. The space looked wide open and obscenely conspicuous. Maria's heart rate doubled. She had left behind her ID, had her hair under one of those shower baggies inside her cap, and had her riding gloves on. Every detail about her screamed crooked. How could she have possibly been so willing to come this far? Her breath sounded as loud as roaring waves. She waited in a crouch in the shadows for 15 minutes, watching for movement. There was nothing. What reason did they have to suspect anyone would interfere? She cut through the fence and moved swiftly for the hole. It was deep enough to leap into, more of a trench section than a straight down hole. The open end of the laid-in pipe was there, and Maria went to work. She had a small remote-controlled car from a cheap electronics store, and she tied the explosive to it. Essentially, the car now was a mobile, homemade concussion grenade, which had been way too simple to construct. She drove the car into the pipe, listening to the childish little growl of its motor, and watching her wire unspool. It was attached to a pull ring for the grenade. Her ears were hyper-tuned. Every snapping twig and gust of wind could be the end of all this. Her only consolation, she realized, was that she could get a bed in the psycho ward instead of a prison cell just by telling them the truth. Finally, the wire reached its limit. She stuffed the car controller back into the backpack, took a deep breath, and pulled the wire. She scrambled out of the hole, counting to herself, not knowing exactly how accurate her home chemistry was going to be. The boom was muffled and low, shaking her enough to throw her to the ground. But she was clear of it, and alive. Then, there was a second, much larger boom, and Maria felt a scorching wave of heat blast her face as all the sounds of the world collapsed into a piercing ring. The night turned orange, and hell itself seemed to be birthing out of the New Jersey dirt. Flames. There were flames everywhere. This wasn't supposed to be happening. Maria wasn't sure if her body would run or not. She rose to her feet. She looked at the inferno. She ran. She drove hard through the night, not caring what direction, no destination in mind, just looking for any road without red lights. She put the fire in her rearview mirror, and the sirens, and the gawkers in the street. So many curves in the road out here. So seemingly easy to leave something behind. Sometimes a fire truck or a police car would wail down the road towards her, coming in from some neighborhood town to help contain the disaster. Every time she wondered if one would turn, follow her, accuse her. None ever did. She stared far over in the lane, let them pass, and kept riding steady. So steady. She didn't want to go home. She didn't want to go to Qual's house. She felt like she was trailing the fire that she had started, that a line of it traced all the way back to the construction site, and that she would bring it anywhere she went. And so she drove. "You ought to be smarter than this," the voice said. "Shut up," she answered. "The gear in your backpack, your clothes, you ought to get rid of them." "What do you know about it?" "I know you're on a mission that's gone sideways, and you need to lock your shit down." "You're just a boy. You shouldn't talk like this." "I was a boy. I'm something much different now." Finally, Maria let the bike slow down and looked around for a sign. She was in farm country, over the river in Pennsylvania. A sign said Ottsville, with nothing in sight to claim to be a town called Ottsville. She saw a park road leading to a small lake and dumped her gloves and backpack in it. The leathers would have to wait until she could find some clothes. The cold would be bad enough, but a girl riding a motorcycle through the night in her skivvies would get more attention than she wanted. The way home was past the accident. So was Dr. Qual's place. She had almost no money beyond what she would need to tank up. She needed time, shelter, and someone who wouldn't ask questions. Damn it. Albany, New York. Maria stood awkwardly on the front porch, feeling like she might just tip over and fall asleep with her face on the door knocker. She had waited in the grass for a couple hours until the sun came up just to be decent. It meant a lot of bugs crawling all over her. The desert rat in her had never adjusted from snakes to these little bugs that lurked in the wet. The door opened. It was his wife. That was okay. Maria was relieved to be transitioning from horrific to just awkward. What was her name? "Jennifer, hi." "Morning," Jennifer replied in a tone that contained a lot of, "Oh Christ, what are you doing on my porch?" Jennifer was in sweats and a little t-shirt, with an old mug full of new coffee. "Look, I'm sorry to be on your porch right now, but I was passing through and needed to rest for a couple hours and thought I'd check in on you." "Motel's 2 miles down the road." Maria composed herself. "You know I wouldn't come around just asking." Jennifer stared for a moment, then turned and walked into the house, leaving the door open. "If I'd had my coffee in me when I opened that door, I probably would have slugged you." Maria stepped carefully across the threshold. Maria was at the kitchen table when he walked in. She wasn't sure whether to stand or what, so she just sat, staring awkwardly. Brian looked older but better, healthier, like he'd grown into himself. There was a touch of gray in his hair, and he wore it well. Jennifer retreated past him into the hallway. He brushed her hand with his fingers and mumbled something to her. Jennifer nodded coldly and left the two of them alone, not looking back. Brian sat opposite Maria and rested his chin on his interlaced fingers, looking over her. "Been drinking?" were his first words. They landed like a fist in the gut. She shook her head. "You look like you've been in a wreck," he said next. She took the offered explanation and nodded. "You hurt?" he followed up. She did something between a shrug and a head shake. "I'm glad you're not talking for a minute," Brian admitted, rubbing at his forehead with the palm of one hand. "Gives me a second to accommodate seeing you." "I was going to stay away," Maria finally said. Brian nodded, a sharp inhale flaring out his nostrils as he laced his fingers tightly together. He squeezed his eyes shut and answered, "What do you need?" "I just need to crash for a few hours, clean up, change clothes, borrow a couple of bucks. I'm good for it. I've got a new job. I just..." Brian shook his head, quickly cutting her off. "Just stop talking, okay?" He rose from the table. "I've got to go to work. Jennifer, too. You can help yourself in the kitchen. She's got bags of clothes for Goodwill. You aren't the same size, but maybe there's something that'll work in a pinch." He reached into his pocket and pulled out his wallet. "I think I've got about 100 here. Will that do?" Maria nodded. "Okay. She comes home for lunch, usually about 12:30. It'd be best if you're gone by then, okay?" She nodded again. He walked out of the room. "Towels are in the closet. You know where the shower is." Maria did something like sleep for about 2 hours. It was hard to tell when she was unconscious in a bad dream or just dwelling in bad thoughts with her eyes closed. Nothing would settle in her brain. When she woke up, she didn't feel rested, but just numb, floating in some dead space outside good and bad. She washed up and picked out some clothes that must have been great for Jennifer's skinny butt, but made little tearing complaints as Maria put them on. They only needed to last a couple of hours. She put a couple of eggs on toast and chewed robotically. There was plenty of coffee there, but Maria didn't touch it. She felt like if she gave her brain any more wax from any direction, it might just go over the ledge completely. The kitchen looked like she remembered it. Not that she'd ever spent much time there. The differences were subtle, mostly decorations that had accumulated over time. A little whiteboard on the fridge with shopping items written on it in two different kinds of handwriting. A perky round cookie jar. If Maria had just a couple more minutes to talk, she might have told Brian that he seemed happy, and she was glad for that. But maybe that was just one pick too many at the scab for either of them. She turned on the TV, looked for the news. No mention of the explosion. The major networks were just jawing at each other over something the president said, and whether it meant he was a tyrant or not. She had better luck online, on the site for Princeton's local paper. No fatalities. A shuddering sob broke through at last. No fatalities. Two firemen treated for smoke inhalation. Acres of forest scorched. Some homes got a new soot paint job. But no fatalities. Maria burned the words into her retinas. She realized then what she might have done to herself if she had seen any other words. She spent the day as nobody, stopping nowhere familiar, paying in cash. New clothes, a sandwich in one of those homespun highway traps for families. She spent such long stretches on the bike that the world without its motor started to sound strange and empty. Laconia got even closer. Was it home? Maria thought back on the path of bad choices, blackouts, and dumb luck that had made the little town in New Hampshire the place she slept. She had a job there, and that was something. There were a few friends, but Maria could never shake the feeling that they were just friendly folk on principle, and that it might not leave much of a hole in their lives if she just up and roared out of town someday. There was Leah. Jesus, Leah. Maria didn't even know what to say to her about why she had been gone, about why the bills would all soon get handled and never be a problem again, about how any given day in the near future the FBI might knock at their door because of some dumb clue or other that Maria hadn't considered. Leah. There was a lot that needed to be said there. Maria saw her on the front porch waiting. Leah stood slowly, working out muscles that must have not moved for a while. Maria said nothing, just walked up and gave her a warm, gentle hug that Maria had to admit was more for her than for her friend. "Is this new job keeping you away?" Leah asked. "Yeah, kid," Maria answered, holding on to the embrace. "What are you doing?" Maria felt the decision in her body more than in her mind. A surrender of muscles, some disillusion of steel that she couldn't consciously stop. "Let's go in, princess. I'll tell you all about it. And once and for all, you'll know I'm the crazy one in this house." Maria kept wanting to be stopped, to be told to back up, say that again. She kept expecting to be asked if she was joking, for Leah to accuse her of messing with her head. She itched at the total lack of challenge to anything she said. But Leah just listened, hands clasped around her mug of tea. The first time she even spoke was when Maria shared that there had been no casualties in the fire. "Oh, thank goodness," she said, though it seemed to come from impulse more than anything else. Finally, the story reached the moment when Maria had pulled up on the old bike in her crappy new clothes and seen Leah on the porch. Maria slapped the table a couple of times to punctuate it all, then leaned back and waited. "So," Leah looked down, focusing on some crumb on the tabletop, and then back up again. "We should get rid of the bike, right? So there aren't any loose ends?" Maria remembered a time back at Lackland when a cadet had cracked completely. It had been building for weeks, fatigue leading to little screw-ups, and then a good jawing at by the TIs, and finally to waves of anxiety. The cadet would pinch her own arms at the elbow, compulsively. Pinch, pinch, pinch. Maria and the others in their flight were told straight up that she was their responsibility, that her failure was their failure. Well, they all failed hard, because no matter how hard they reassured, encouraged, cajoled, or threatened to straighten her up, the spiral kept heading down until one morning Maria saw her jamming the bed sheets tight under the corners of her mattress over and over, like she was trying to make them more than perfect, random words dribbling out of her mouth. No more than a few words at a time were connecting to anything. They were like a shattered window falling. No piece would ever belong to any other again. They would just break further and further apart until they hit the ground. That was the last day Maria saw the cadet. In a way, it had set her expectations for people. It seemed inevitable that everyone only moved closer to broken, closer to washing out. It felt right by everything going on inside her. It was only a matter of how long you could hold on. But here, the opposite was happening before her eyes. Leah seemed steady in a way that she had never previously been. The distracted air, the eyes that had always seemed to be confirming where the exits in the room were, The fragility and uneasiness that defined her demeanor, they were suddenly gone, like a shell that had fallen off. It was the absolute last thing Maria had expected. "So do you think I'm crazy, right? I mean all of it." Leah thought for a moment, then answered, "No." That was all. "How can you not? I mean, it's the nuttiest thing in the world." Leah frowned, wrinkled her brow, and then found the words. "I've lived with liars, and I know when you're lying. Think of how many card games we've played. So whatever is going on, I know you believe it, and I'll believe it too, because it would be nice to have that lottery money." Maria looked incredulous. Was that a joke? Something like a smile twitched at Leah's lips. "Yeah, a bit." Maria slept the rest of the day. Qualls and Maria didn't talk about the accident. It would have been a foolish thing to discuss by phone, and they could both read the news. The fiber optic cable was being laid underneath an oil pipeline, and the explosion below had punctured that and led to some accidental ignition that only by some miracle hadn't left all of New Jersey burning underground. It had, however, made it nearly impossible to determine just what caused the initial blast, and the secretiveness of the people laying the new cable was enough to draw a distracting amount of suspicion. It sounded as if, by everything they had been told, Maria had successfully carried out her mission. "So now what?" she asked. Qualls' response was quiet. He had been talking quietly throughout the whole conversation, and Maria couldn't decide whether to interpret that as real, unconscious paranoia on his part, or some kind of impish pleasure in taking part in revolutionary subterfuge. It was getting on her nerves, though. "Well, we have the next pickup site for a marker. I think they're leaving them closer to you now, so you won't need to travel quite so far. We have to wait at least a month while I record the market information they want. And then they say that the next marker will arrive on that day that I postmarked the letter to them. It will tell us what your next mission is, if any." "Yeah, but did we change the future? If so, do the guys we're sending it to even know what we did? Or why they're even talking to us? How do they keep track?" "You're delving into fundamental questions about how time works, and I'm afraid I can only guess at answers. We'll just have to see." "Wow, that's brilliant." Life was quiet for a few days. Maria didn't work, although Leah did a couple of consecutive days in the little shop where she helped out, and that was unusual and good. The biggest worry became how to handle the rent, since their fortune had yet to arrive, and Maria still owed Brian $100 besides. She scrounged restlessly through her room, looking for salable trinkets that she knew weren't there. There was something to be said for a lean life, but Maria just thought hers looked empty. She had an album of photos other people had taken, back when she was surrounded by people in school and the Air Force. None of them were recent. She had yearbooks, and she didn't know why she still lugged those things around. She didn't know anybody in them anymore and didn't really want to. She couldn't sell them, but burning them seemed like an option. Her clothes were utilitarian. The most expensive items she had owned were her motorcycle leathers, and they were in a trash compactor somewhere in New York now. She went to the living room, where Leah had, as promised, cleaned up the mantle and put up Maria's Air Force medals. She took them all, went to the computer, and looked on eBay to see what they were going for these days. She sold them in a bundle and made about $75. It would help. A Sickness in Time by M.F. Thomas and Nicholas Thirkettle. Narrated by Roseanne Sinclair. If you love listening to this podcast, please leave a review in Apple Podcasts. Learn more about the novel by visiting www.sicknessandtime.com.